Morning, morning, morning. Good morning. Foggy morning here in Salford. Although the sky was that bit brighter at 6:30 this morning when I took my canine chums out of the house. That's a good thing. So if there's a bit of a stretch in the evenings, there's less of a stretch in the night. Right. Bit brighter, which is great, isn't it? Bit soul destroying, going out walking animals in the dark and coming back and it's still dark. Dawn hasn't broken. Can't be good for the animals. But anyway, there you are. Good morning to Michael Millis. How sad am I sat here waiting for Richie? You are one sad bastard, Michael. I said this the other morning. Makes me laugh. Sitting there waiting for this crap. But, yeah. I suppose I should express some gratitude. Thanks for watching it. It does neither of us any good. But here we are, anyway. It is the 5th of February. And there's a bit to get through. So straight to the front pages then, without further ado, or just before we get to the papers, let's have some more ado. Let's have further ado. Hi to John, to Julie, to Una, Martin, 26, to Rick, to Eloise. How you doing, Eloise? To Chris, to Pierre, to Mr. Roper, Sooty there, Red Squirrel there, Neil James, how you doing? Paddy Dunn, lovely. Jason, Jabba's Soapbox, lots of you there chatting away amongst yourselves. John and Sarah, good job. Right, the front pages of the UK's newspapers. The Mail is first up today, the Daily Mail. This is good, this. Cameron's bodyguard leaves gun in jet loo. Yeah. Panic as passenger finds loaded Glock pistol in the jacks. Does anybody refer to the toilet as the jacks these days? Lots of great slang words for the toilet. The kazi. The kazi. That's an Australian one, isn't it? The loo. That's a slang word. The jacks. Any more that we can think of? No? The dunny. The dunny. That's an Australian one. I'm going to the Danny. The Danny. To have a number two. The Dunny. David Cameron's bodyguard not only left the loaded Glock pistol in the jacks. I wouldn't fire the guy just for making me laugh. Story in the Mail today. Shock horror. Bodyguard sparks panic on BA flight from New York to London. Passenger finds the Glock, which was accidentally left in the toilet. There you go. Good man. Good man. Why not? Lovely. There's a picture of a Glock. Yeah. A source said, fortunately, it was found. I should just read it properly, shouldn't I? I'm blind, me. These glasses are terrible. I think I'm long overdue an eye examination. Pretty sure of it. Fortunately, it was found by a law-abiding member of the public, said one idiotic source. What are the fucking chances on a BA flight from New York to London that a psychopath would find it? You know? Lovely! A Glock! Yes! I can kill as many people as I can and bring the plane down. I mean, give me a break. So, he found a gun and two passports, one of them belonging to David Cameron. Lovely stuff. The pilot was aware at all times that an armed officer or armed officers were accompanying the former Prime Minister. So the Mail is loving that story today. Let's get rid of it there. A bit worrying though, really. You think your training would prevent you from doing that. I don't know. But we've all left things in the loo. Most commonly newspapers, I suppose. These days people are leaving phones. Increasingly leaving phones in the loo. Because they're on their phone when they're on the loo. Because they can't fucking go anywhere without their phones. Like this, when they're having a crap. And then they put the phone on the windowsill. Or on the top of the cistern. Then they wash their hands. They walk out of the toilet without their phone. Sounds like you know a lot. Yeah, I've done it. Not in public. I've done it at home. I've done it in my house. Where the fuck's my phone? All right, it's in the toilet. Right, the Sun newspaper. Cameron cop left gun in JetBlue. He did. Imagine it. There was no Al-Qaeda or ISIS or Al-Shabaab people on the plane at the time, which was handy. The Metro, you are as guilty as your brother. Hashim Al-Abedi is on trial for his life. No, he won't be sentenced to death if he is found guilty. Of course not, but he will go to prison forever. The brother of Salman Al-Abedi, the man who blew himself up at Manchester Arena on the 22nd of May 2017, killing 22 people. And Hashim Al-Abedi is 22 years old. Two little ducks, quack, quack. Serious Masonic numbers going on there. According to some people. I don't know. I hear these things just as you do. I don't dismiss them. Maybe I would have done one time. These days I'm more open-minded. It is alleged that he provided material support and was just as intimately involved in the bombing as the brother, whom we are told blew himself up in the foyer of the arena, killing himself and 22 innocent people. He's on trial at the Old Bailey in London, and the victims' families are watching it via, I never thought I'd say this, closed circuit television, which used to be all the rage back in the day. Closed circuit TV. As well they might. So we'll follow that with interest. The trial is expected to last for a month at least, probably two, maybe even three. So there's a bit of this in the papers today. The Star, tabloid newspaper, reminding us that the bomb strapped to the body of Salman Abedi was so strong that his head was found hundreds of feet from his body. His head was found at, Victoria train station is right, runs underneath Manchester Arena, which is an amazing construction, is the arena, an amazing venue, in fact. One of the, if not the greatest indoor venues in the world. It's Europe's biggest indoor arena, I believe, and the third or fourth biggest indoor arena in the world. It can hold 22,000 people. And the acoustics are amazing. Amazing. Great place to hear live music. For a big venue. You know, people argue, don't they? Don't they? Connoisseurs of music, music lovers argue about vast arenas. Are they appropriate places to hear music? Shouldn't music be intimate? Yes, yes. But we're past all that now. Some of these artists are so big they can't perform in 1,200-seater theatres. They can't do that. They need to do 50 nights in a row. Michael Jackson was going to do that in London, wasn't he? They've got to be in these arenas. And as arenas go, and I've been in many of them, I've been in the Olympia Halle, so I have. In Munich, I've been in Madison Square Garden, so I have. I was at Boston Gardens, so I was. And they're okay, but nothing sounds like the Manchester Arena. It was designed by geniuses who knew what they were doing when it came to creating a sonic space. But anyway, they found this guy's head, train station. Of course, a lot of conspiracy researchers believe that the whole thing was faked and nobody died. Big fake. Nobody died. I happen to have lived only across the street from a nurse who worked on the evening and dealt with some of the dead and the wounded. I attended to them and said to me that she'd seen a lot of things in her career as a nurse, but she'd never seen anybody brought in because of anything like that. Understandably, you don't expect during your career you're going to be dealing with the victims of a bomb. But she said some of the injuries were absolutely horrendous that she witnessed on the evening. I have no doubt that a bomb did go off there and that people were killed and people were injured. Did Salman Abedi do it? Was he acting of his own volition? Was he under duress? These are things I'm prepared to contemplate and have done, particularly because of their father's involvement with MI6. Ramadan Al-Abadi, a story that was broke exclusively on the Richie Allen radio show by none other than former MI5 agent David Shaler. Turned out he was bang on. Agent Tunworth. So there's a lot wrong with the story. But the notion that the whole thing was faked and that nobody was injured or died is laughable. It's preposterous. I can say that because, as I said, I know somebody who worked on the evening in question and was dealing with the aftermath of it. So there you are. Okay. We've done the Mail, we've done the Sun, we've done the Metro, have we? We have. Let's do the Mirror. They wanted to kill and maim as many as possible. So that's... Fuck off! That was one of the statements made by the prosecution yesterday, because the trial began yesterday. So in the opening sequences, in the opening statement, the prosecutor said that these guys were hell-bent on killing and injuring as many people as they possibly could on the night in question. Like I said, this is going to go on for a while. Niall. It's going to go on for a month, 2, 3 months even. We'll see how it goes. The Guardian. Get out if you can! The warning to 30,000 Britons who are still in China. This is coronavirus. Number of agencies running a story this morning about a cruise ship in the South Pacific, I believe, that has been quarantined. People have been tweeting from it and speaking to their friends from it, saying that food has been rationed. The hysteria around the so-called coronavirus doesn't show any sign, immediately anyway, of dying down. But I stand by what I said earlier this week and last week. Give it a few weeks, you won't be hearing about coronavirus, and it'll be like it never happened. There you go. And they've named one of the two people who was injured on Sunday on Streatham High Road when they were attacked by a man wielding a knife. The man whom I can't remember his name, to be honest. And he had been sentenced to 3 years and 6 months or 8 months in prison and was released early, having served only half of that sentence. That's, again, that story getting a lot of coverage today because of plans, because of stated plans by the Prime Minister, by the Home Secretary, by the Foreign Secretary, to end this early release of prisoners, particularly prisoners who have been convicted of terrorist offences. That's The Guardian. Let's have a look at the Times front page. Surgeons, 11,000 patients face checks. I'm not going to get into that. It's obviously a big story here in the UK. It was a big story yesterday about operations being performed on people, on women, unnecessary operations by a surgeon called Patterson. And I've not been following it, so I'm going to leave it there. That story, okay? First rule of broadcast school. When you don't know anything about something, don't speak about it. I've heard it in the news, on the news in the background, but I've not been paying any attention. BBC licence fee dodgers will be let off, says the iPaper. Will they? Will they be let off? Again, this is a story that is everywhere this morning. It is everywhere. This notion that the government, which isn't very fond of the BBC, allegedly, is going to decriminalise non-payment of the licence fee. So that's on the front page of the iPaper. It's being covered in depth everywhere. Here it is in the Times. We'll have a very quick read of it, because it is of interest, of course, isn't it? People ask me about Ireland. Yes, in Ireland there is a compulsory television licence fee as well. There is indeed. I never paid it when I lived in Ireland either. And there was a summons issued against myself in mid-2002 when I lived in a street or on a street called O'Brien Street in Waterford. This is a true story. And O'Brien Street would be a 3 to 5 minute stroll to Waterford Central Garda Station, which is, as far as I know, based at Ballybricken in Waterford, which is basically Waterford City Centre. O'Brien Street is Waterford City Centre. We were very close to the Garda Station. Our front door was knocked on. That's the future Mrs. Allen and me. We were only together a few weeks. And I remember one miserable late summer's evening in 2002. It wasn't a great evening. There was a rap on the front door and I answered it. And there was a Garda Síochána, the Irish police force, the Gardaí. One guy on his own, and he had a Kerry accent or a Limerick. I can't remember where the feck he was from. But he was an aggressive little bastard. And he told me that a summons had been issued against me for non-payment of the TV licence. And now that there was an order, basically, that I basically had to pay up immediately, or I would be taken into custody. This is true. I would be taken to Cork and put in prison for a week or whatever. So the guy said I had to go to the Garda station the following morning with the licence money. I told the guy that I wouldn't be attending the Garda station with the licence money, that I would never pay the licence fee. And that was the end of that, basically. Go about your business now. The guy said to me if I didn't show up the following morning, that he would be back to arrest me. And I said, well, you better bring some fucking help, pal. True story. If the future Mrs. Allen was here now, she would acknowledge it. And he said, are you threatening me? I said, I'm not threatening you, but if you come back here tomorrow to try and take me into custody for non-payment of the licence fee, you better bring some fucking help, man. I'm 6'6" tall. I weigh 14.5 stone. I can fight. I'm not going to come quietly. You understand? Now, fuck off. And he did fuck off. And funnily enough, they never came anywhere near me. Strangely enough. I was convinced the following day I would be taken into custody. They never came anywhere near me. And maybe it would have escalated. But only a few months later, the future Mrs. Allen and I decamped. We upped sticks and we moved to Manchester. Not to get away from Cork prison over non-payment of the licence fee, but because we were, well, not we, Caroline's very fond of Ireland. I was sick to fucking death of Ireland, still am. Hate the place. Not the people, the place, the politics, what it's become. But yeah, a little jumped up fucking moron in a fluorescent jacket. Come to the station tomorrow and pay the fine or we'll come and arrest you. Do, come and arrest me. Just bring a few of your fucking mates. And that's not tough talk now by me. I'm not a tough talking guy, me. I was serious. You know, I said, do, but it's going to be fucking bloodshed here. And they never came back, strangely enough. But yeah, Ireland is the same as the UK in terms of it is a criminal offence not to pay the licence fee. But it seems, now I know some people in Ireland have been taken to prison for a week or so for non-payment. But it seems that in the vast majority of cases, the Irish Gardaí or the authorities here have better things to do and they don't pursue it. In a majority of cases. Funnily enough, later on, I spoke to a governor of a prison in Ireland. I can't remember which one. It might have been a prison. It might have been a prison in Limerick. But I asked him about people going to prison for non-payment of the TV licence. And he said to me, and John Lonergan, I don't want to misquote John now, very famous Irish prison governor. He ran Mountjoy Prison for 25 years. One of the nicest, most humanitarian, decent men you would ever meet in your life, John Lonergan. Wonderful guy. Testimonies to John from former prisoners of Mountjoy, litany of people who talk about the man's humanitarian approach. Lovely man. I think John might have said the same thing. When prisoners are brought to jails in Ireland for non-payment of licence fee, it is common for the governor of the prison to take custody of the prisoner from the police, and then when the police have gone, give the basically basically tell the prisoner to fuck off. Go home. And I was told by an Irish prison governor, if you'd been taken to Cork prison, Richie, what would have happened most likely is the governor of the prison would have told you to go home. And that would have been the end of it. I don't know. Anyway, I've never had a TV licence. And I've never had a TV licence here in the UK. And I never will. And the Times is running this story today about a shortfall for the BBC. The BBC's funding will be in dire straits. Its ability to do what the BBC does will be under threat if the licence fee prosecutions end. The government is proposing that to introduce legislation to decriminalise it, and it is being said that, well, if it is decriminalised, most people just won't pay it. If you're not compelled to pay it, why would you? Is the story doing the rounds this morning. And I'm going to talk about it very briefly in a monologue of the radio show later on, because I have got some very interesting audio from BBC television and radio this morning. Okay, so that's the iPaper. The Express, very briefly, outrage over free TV licence betrayal. This is pensioners. It's a different story. Okay, the government withdrew the exemption that pensioners previously enjoyed. The exemption, the licence fee exemption. Pensioners didn't have to pay it. Now they do. Well, it's means tested now on pensioners. And pensioners are up in arms about this. So, like I said, the TV licence fee is getting a good airing this morning. This one will run and run, as Gabo used to say, God rest his soul. The Financial Times. Top US SoftBank. What the fuck is that story? Again, that's one I haven't read this morning. I don't know what it is. A fund executive is going to quit as bad bets shake confidence. Yeah. Pension fund managers playing cavalier games with the pot of cash that is basically the savings of workers. Hard work, the blood, sweat and tears of working men and women playing risky games with pension funds. Obviously, that's the story. I haven't read it, so again, I won't get into it. Let's move on. And finally, the Star. Potty! Hard Up Council pays £1,000 a day for an expert to sort out potholes. That's the sort of bullshit that you've come to expect from local authorities. Potholes are everywhere. The streets of Salford, I can't imagine, could be much worse than the streets of fucking downtown Baghdad or Kabul. You know? You might look at some of the streets around here and think that ordnance has been rained down on the streets from warplanes for the last few years. It is that fucking bad. Nobody does anything about it. Yet they threaten and bully and harass people to pay their council tax. So the Star leads with a story today. For a change, it's not a story about Love Island or some other celebrity bollocks. It's a story about how councils, or some councils, are giving people a grand a day to tell them what to do about potholes, when the answer is very fucking simple. Get a fucking wheelbarrow and some tarmac and some fucking sand. Pay some people who don't have work to go and fill in the fucking things, and it will cost you less than £1,000 a day. Fucking hell. Right? Right. Makes you fucking mad, doesn't it? You know, road tax and every other fucking tax you pay. You're driving along 30 miles an hour and the fucking car goes down like that. Fucking bang. What the fuck was that? Big gaping, glaring pothole in the middle of the road. Madness. Good morning. We'll look at some of the stories inside now. So we will. Lots and lots of comments this morning. The occult priestess says, why do you pay television tax? And air conditioning too. I have no idea. What's the relationship between TV tax and air conditioning. I'm not taking the piss now there, priestess. I don't know what you're saying there. Mark says, I threatened the licensed guy in 2013. He didn't even get the police on me. Look, nobody has right of entry to your home. Nobody. So again, I'm not telling you not to pay the license fee. I cannot do that. I can't encourage you to break the law. And I'm not encouraging you to break the law. What I can tell you is, nobody has the right to enter your property, even if it is a property you are renting. Although the notion that I own my property is fucking ridiculous. Mortgaged up to the tits, as I am. Fucking ownership, right? Yes, TV license person. I'm the TV license inspector. I've nothing to say to you. Have a nice day. Close the fucking door. That's the end of it. No, really. I have never in all the years I've been doing this radio program given you advice that turned out to be untrue or turned out to be misguided. That is it. I've nothing to say to you. Do you have a television? Nothing to say to you. Thank you. Have a good day. You're not welcome around here. I'm not buying anything. Thank you. Close the door. That's it. Don't believe me? Look it up. Right? Same with any, you know, person who comes along over some non-criminal civil debt that it is alleged you owe. Some civil debt, some non-criminal debt, like your council tax. And they'll farm it out to a debt collection agency. They'll come a-knocking. We're from a debt collection agency. Go away. Don't come back here again. Close the door. It's the way it works. Those of you who've been listening to the radio show a long time will remember my hilarious phone conversations, which I recorded and played on the radio show, of me dealing with a debt collection agency back in 2015 when Manchester Council said, oh, we're sorry, Mr. Allen, we underestimated your council tax bill. You actually owe us an extra £250 from last year. And I said, go and fuck yourself. You made a mistake, that's not my fault, fuck off. Okay? Put me into the proper band next year, but you're not getting any retrospective tax because you made a mistake. Oh, but we will get it. I said, no, but you fucking won't. We will. Within 3 months, guy rocks up to the front door, red jacket on him, with a nice label. I'm from some debt collection agency. We're here to collect the debt on behalf of Manchester City Council. I said to the guy, go away. The guy went away. I said, don't come back. 2 days later, he came back and I said, right, if you come back a third time, I'm going to break your fucking legs. And then I'm going to call the police. Because I believe that you're threatening me now. You're harassing me. Don't come back here again. And then I phoned them and had a hilarious series of conversations with the debt collection agency and the council, which I later published on the radio. They have no right of entry to your house. They can't even anymore. They used to be able to, many years ago, enter your house if you left a window open. They can't do that anymore. Can't do anything. If you've got a car, put it in a garage or hide it. Or park it four streets down the way or the road. That's how you deal with these people. I've paid every debt I've ever owed in my life. I'm not somebody who doesn't pay his way. But I won't have any council saying to me, oh, we fucked up last year. We gave you some relief on council tax, but we shouldn't have given it to you. Tough shit, Paddy. Tough shit, Paddy. Imagine you bought a sandwich from a fucking shop. The guy charged you 120. You're halfway down the street and you're eating the sandwich and the guy comes to you and says, it was actually 150 that. I couldn't give a fuck, pal. You said 120 to me. I'm eating the sandwich now. Not going to give you another 30 pence. Your fault. Go back and get your act together. Don't make that mistake again. That's how you deal with these people. And I come from a long line of people, it must be said, that take great delight in dealing with these people and putting them back in their box where they fucking belong. But as for TV license, not going to tell you what to do. But when inspectors show up, they have no right whatsoever. You just be polite. Always be polite. particularly with TV licensed people. Just be polite. No thanks. Thanks very much. Have a good day. I'm too busy. Bye bye. Close the door. And if they happen to come back again, which is unlikely, same thing. Sorry. Close the door. Don't be rude. Don't swear. Don't get involved in a conversation. Just not interested. Thank you. Thank you. Don't come again. Couldn't be any simpler. Right. Good morning. Paying for your own propaganda, a number of you are saying there. 2-6 alleges that most women in jail in the UK are there for non-payment of the TV licence. And your sources, can you back that up? I'm not saying I don't believe it. Something I might, something I could believe, really. But, yeah. Yeah, maybe that is the case. I'd be very surprised though, you know. Surprised that when women are taken or men are taken to prison over the license fee, I'm surprised that the serving administration of the prison don't just tell the people to turn around and just go home. Like I said, this was going on in Ireland. I know this to be true. Governors are saying, what are you fucking here for? Non-payment of TV license. Right, go home. Go home. Anyway, what have we got for you today? Very quickly, I don't regret what I said, insists the teenager who insulted Islam. This is a big story in France. Death threats for a woman. Well, she's a 16-year-old girl, really, who allegedly insulted Islam. France doesn't have blasphemy laws. Do we? In the UK? I'm sure we do we? I'll have to look that up. I know I've covered this before. Have we got blasphemy laws here in the UK? Maybe we do. Maybe we don't. Maybe we do. She described the Quran as being full of hate and is standing by her opinion. She's received death threats since then, and she's been on national television in France to talk about it. This comes up every few years, doesn't it? Somebody saying something about the Quran or Islam and death threats materialising. I don't know. She streamed a video to Instagram, got involved in an argument with a Muslim user and had a go at the Quran. Now she's getting death threats. Yeah. I'm old enough to remember the satanic verses. And Salman Rushdie, do you remember all that? Big story, wasn't it? Back in the very early 90s, was it? Was it? 90, 91? 89, 1991? Salman Rushdie's the satanic verses. And a fatwa was issued against Salman. And he wasn't seen around town for quite a while. And then he emerged on stage in London with U2 at Wembley Stadium in 1993 with Bono, who was dressed up as Mephistopheles, Mephisto. And that was a big case of a fatwa being issued against people or somebody who criticises the Quran. I would imagine that the vast majority of Muslims couldn't give a fuck, really. You know, but you have hardliners, I suppose, everywhere. We hear a lot about hardline Islamists, obviously, in the news all the time. Even though hardline Islamists were created by and given oxygen by the intelligence agencies of our countries, of course. But, yeah. Donald Trump gave the State of the Union address last night. That's making the news today for a couple of reasons. I'm interested in Trump drawing attention to Juan Guaido. Guaido. RT picked up on this. This is this dickhead who claims to be Venezuela's legitimate leader. This absolute American fucking puppet, Juan Guaido. Traitor to the people of Venezuela. And RT describes Trump mentioning him as cringeworthy, this guy Guaido, this fucking arsehole, whom Maduro should have ordered to be arrested, had ample opportunities to have the guy arrested and thrown in jail for treason, but didn't. Maybe discretion was the better part of valour, I don't know. But there you are. It's making the news today for a couple of things. When Trump strode valiantly to the podium to make his address, he refused the outstretched hand of House Leader Nancy Pelosi.
Absolutely, Nora, because as he does that, he will be speaking to a room filled with House Democrats who voted to impeach him just a month and a half ago, and dozens of Senate Democrats and Republicans who spent the day today announcing on the Senate floor how they will vote on his acquittal or removal. So the timing here could be better. On the other hand, the president does give this speech with the certainty that he will be acquitted tomorrow. It would take a two-thirds vote to remove him. And at this point, it looks like it's going to be a vote that comes down largely on party lines.
And Nancy, you see the Speaker of the House just tried to shake the president's hand, and he refused, or perhaps did not see her hand.
Then he began the address. Then he finished the address, which was basically just invective and hyperbole and bullshit. And at the end of it then, she rips up the speech. Pure theatre. The presidency, nothing more than
God bless you
reality
and
television.
God bless America. Thank you very much.
Social media in flames discussing this today. Wonderful. Identity politics. Isn't it brilliant? There she is. Right. Okay. Enough of that old bollocks there. Enough of that old garbage. What else have we got for you? The Times runs a piece today lamenting the lack of ethnic diversity on the boards of FTSE 100 companies. Basically the most successful companies in the country. Not enough diversity there. Not enough people of colour on the boards. Britain's biggest companies will miss a government-backed target to have at least one board director from an ethnic minority background by 2021. So the government set a target. You need to have at least one director from a minority group or from a vulnerable group. And they're going to miss this target. This is the Parker Review, launched back in 2017, 37% of FTSE 100 boards still have all-white boards. Although the latest figures are an improvement on the 50% that had no ethnic minority representation 3 years ago. Very interesting this, because companies or corporations have a legal obligation. You might know this, you might not know this. Some of you will know, some of you won't know. A very serious legal obligation to their shareholders. Directors and executives of companies cannot do anything, even if it is good for the environment or even if it is good for humanity. They cannot do anything, any act, any program, any decision. Nothing can be done if it negatively impacts on the shareholders of the company. Corporations are psychotic institutions. So this is very interesting. This idea that you must have somebody from an ethnic minority background on your board. At least one person. Just amazes me, this bullshit, you know. But it's everywhere today, this. The BBC are covering it. A black woman is claiming that her African name was a barrier to advancement, prevented her getting job opportunities. There she is. Her name is, I don't know how to pronounce her first name, I'm presuming it's Funke, F-U-N-K-E, Funke Abimbola. Funke Abimbola. She's a lawyer and a campaigner on issues of diversity. And on this story that a third of FTSE 100 companies do not have ethnic minority representation, she's weighed in and said, I found a number of barriers to entering the profession because I had an African name and am a black woman without any doubt. She told the BBC I had to make over 100 phone calls to get a foot in the door. Jesus Christ, I remember over the years applying for jobs and sending out hundreds of curriculum vitaes, of CVs, of resumes, hundreds of them. I remember making, I'm not exaggerating, at least dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of phone calls to firms in media, in various media sectors, not just radio, saying I need a job. Hundreds. And often it was a very difficult process, but I never imagined that my ethnic background or my accent or my political opinions played any part in it. It's just the way of it, isn't it? When you go for jobs. But she says undoubtedly it was down to some sort of systemic subconscious racism. This is everywhere and everywhere and everywhere, every day of the week, identity politics. She said she was judged more harshly over other colleagues. She's experienced bias and situations where, being a black woman, she was judged more harshly. Note, the BBC never asks any of these people to give an example. That's journalism 101. Somebody says, as a black woman, I've experienced harsher treatment than my colleagues. The next question, even for the most useless journalist, is give us an example there, Funke. Give us an example. We'll have a look at it. We'll examine your example. Maybe you're reading a bit much into it. But yeah, everywhere today. Again, this idea. What are we, 12 minutes past 10? Loads to do, loads to do. This made me laugh yesterday. I don't normally like MPs from any party, any background. Don't like any man or woman. It's a bit psychotic, isn't it? It's a bit creepy. Wanting to basically control people's lives and make decisions for people. Tell people what to do. I don't like it. I don't like authority, full stop. I never have done. But this made me laugh yesterday. When Joe Cox was murdered before the referendum in 2016, Batley and Spen, Yorkshire MP Joe Cox, the by-election that followed was won by Tracy Brabin, forever known in the northwest of England as that woman off a curry. What does that woman off a curry mean? She played a character in Coronation Street in the 90s. She's now an MP. She's an actress. And she was pictured in Parliament yesterday, I'm sure it was yesterday, wearing an off-the-shoulder dress. And as is the way, people took to Twitter to discuss her clothing of choice. There she is with the off-the-shoulder dress. And some of the comments sent to her, some of the tweets sent to her were, well, they didn't hold back in the name calling and all the rest of it. But I liked her response. Not too much poor me, not too much pity me. Look, I'm a woman and I'm being abused. I thought there was a lot of humour in her response. She said, sorry, I don't have time to reply to all of you commenting on this, but I can confirm that I'm not a slag, hungover, a tart, about to breastfeed, a slapper, drunk, or my personal favourite, just been banged over a wheelie bin. She didn't have a knee trembler up against the wall in an alley. I like that. That's the way you deal with it. Don't get too precious about the trolling. Smile. Be a bit witty if you can and move on. Good for her. Well done, I say. Well done. Cambridge University in the Mail today. Freshers' Fair events. Freshers. That week at the beginning of the first term, university, when they all go back to uni in September, and the new students, the year one students, they go on the piss, they go on the tear, they go on the raz for a week. Miss lectures, get pissed up, roll around in vomit and wear vomit-encrusted clothing to their classes. We've all been there. Well, Cambridge University Unionists banned military people from attending these fairs because their presence could trigger students with mental health issues. I'm not as keen to be as condemning of this as I might have been last week or yesterday. Maybe it's because, again, you know, it suits us sometimes, other times it doesn't suit us. I don't have any time for the military, of course. I don't have any time for military recruiters. I don't have any time for that sort of thing. But, yeah, that's in the Mail. That you might find that interesting. It's Mail, dailymail.co.uk if you want to read that. Let's move on. Let's move on swiftly. The Mail is kind of portraying it as a kind of a snowflakey type story. But there's a little bit more to it than that. You know, take your imperialism and your wars of aggression somewhere fucking else. Don't come near our campus. It's what they're saying. And, well, maybe we can understand it. 17 minutes past 10. What else have I got for you? Thanks for all your comments there, by the way. I really do appreciate them. Chatting away amongst yourselves. Okay. Lovely. Right, I'm going to love you and leave you. There is a bit more, but I don't have time to get into it this morning. Very busy radio show coming up at 5 o'clock. Don't miss it. Charlie Pixley will join me live on the show to talk about a book that saw him sent to prison back in the 1990s. A book that's still banned, but he still sells it. It's about cancer. And it's a nice follow-up to the conversation I had yesterday with Amanda Vollmer. You don't want to miss him. And on the things that Donald Trump might be impeached for, but are being kept hidden from the American people, Jim Fetzer, who was a huge champion of Donald Trump back in 2016, and now has done a 180-degree U-turn. Jim Fetzer, who's not been on the programme for months and months and months, will join me to talk about Donald Trump as well. That will be very interesting, that. So it's a busy show, and we'll have a news roundup as well. Usual time, 5 o'clock, usual channels. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. It's bye from me.